Polarization just keeps getting worse in Washington. It's as bad as they've ever seen it, and it seems to be making Americans very upset.
Impeach 45!
This is politics.
Impeach 45!
Is this where we want to set the bar for future presidents?
Clinton was the worst in history.
It was a vote along party lines that made President Clinton only the...
I'm not for gay marriage.
I believe marriage is between a man and a woman.
I believe marriage is between a man and a woman.
And so does
Barack Obama nor I support redefining the Constitution.
A limousine was set on fire downtown.
It's my decision.
Smoke could be seen for blocks away. And protesters hurled trash cans and flash bombs at the Capitol. The bill is working intense partisan fighting.
Hey guys, welcome back to Bob and Weave. That's Bob. I'm the Weave. And as you can tell, I'm back, but I'm still not fully healed. Like I'm talking crazy and I got no voice barely.
Is that what's going? See, I thought you were just finally going through puberty.
Maybe that's it.
Because yeah. Your voice is cracking.
Man, my voice is cracking like crazy.
You are teething.
I am teething. Yeah.
First time.
Which I just found out. I mean, I've been sick for, over a week now.
Mm-hmm.
And for the last few days, my tooth has been killing me and I couldn't figure it out. And I thought maybe it's just because I was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started looking in the mirror, like got a flashlight out, started looking. And I'm like, son of a bitch, I have a tooth coming in. Yeah. 35 years old. I have a tooth coming in.
His wisdom teeth finally came in. And that explains a lot that Zach's wisdom teeth don't come in until he turns 35.
Yeah. Some of us are slow.
Yeah. For you video people, those of you that were watching on video as opposed to just listening, suck it in. Suck it in. I meant soak it in. Soak it in, because this is the last time that you're going to get to see my glorious beard.
At least for right now.
For, yeah. Well, it'll take a little while to grow it again. So for those of you that have never watched the YouTube videos and only listen, for the last few months, I've been growing a glorious...
It has gotten glorious.
Duck Dynasty style beard. And
yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
I know.
I mean, you've trimmed it a little bit.
And on that note, hope you guys have been enjoying. Of course, last week's video was a little rough because Ray Andriacchio's video cut out. So it was
can I tell you how bummed I am about that whole situation?
Yeah,
I was really, really looking forward to talking to her. We talked about it. I listened to Culpable to the point that I was trying to get caught up. I listened to like 7 episodes in one day trying to get caught up
right.
To talk to Ray. And then I come out and I can't talk at all. Like I'm just sick as a dog.
I know. I was bummed you weren't here too. Yeah. Partially because it's just what I love about anybody we talk to is that we have two very different perspectives on just about everything.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I'm very much in the kind of investigative mode and fact based when I'm talking to her.
Yep.
And like, I think there's a lot of other questions that you may have asked.
Yeah. Cause I'm the idiot.
Right. But now you got that wisdom tooth.
That is true. One though. Yeah. So
just one,
just 25%.
Right. but anyway, back to my glorious beard. So the plan was, I think I mentioned this, like when we first started doing the show a couple months ago, that I was going to grow this thing out until right before we go to Mexico, which is, and by the way, in 2 weeks, there won't be an episode because we're Zach and I are going to be gone with our wives. We're going on a vacation. But so I got a little bit of time left. And then I looked at my calendar and realized I have an appointment with the DMV on Thursday, which is tomorrow.
I think you should leave it.
No, I'm not leaving it. It's to renew my driver's license. And in Michigan, you only have to go in and take a new picture every 8 years.
Do you realize your beard would almost be out of the picture?
I know. They wouldn't know how long it is.
That's how good it is.
Right. But if I go in and take that picture, then I'm going to have this beard for the next 8 years on my license. And I already have, when I show my ID for something, now because I don't have a beard in that picture from 8 years ago, and I look much younger because I was 8 years younger. People are like, look twice, like, is that really you? So if I have a picture where I have a giant beard, it's just, I don't want it for 8 years.
Do you want to talk about how many times I hurt your feelings today too?
He's hurt my feelings 3 times just this morning because we recorded our Truth and Justice episode just a little bit ago. He hurt my feelings 3 times.
I can't help it. You're soft today.
I had an idea about a new business venture. I was really excited
about. Shut that one down.
Shot that down. We were talking about the interview that we did on Truth and Justice and I was all excited about it, and you're like, "Nah,
yeah, it happened."
Yep. And then, you told me my face was fat.
Didn't say it was fat.
Told me I had a fat face.
Said it was round.
He said,
"It's round."
I was talking about shaving my beard, and I showed him a picture that I had on my desk of my wife and I from when we first started dating 10 years ago.
It was a good looking picture.
Yeah. And I was like, you probably don't even remember me or didn't even know that I used to look like this.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, your face is going to be much rounder now.
Rounder. I have a round face too. It's not a big deal. Thick boy nation.
That's right. Thick boy nation with the puberty. Cracked voice.
I know. I don't know how this is going to go today.
Well, it's going to be super interesting because Zach's kind of the lead on this. So I'm sure you saw from the title. If not, this is episode 16, and we are going to be reviewing or discussing
both
the Netflix documentary Don't F with Cats.
Go ahead and say it. We're explicit.
You say it.
Don't fuck with cats. I don't have a problem saying it.
Right. I don't either.
I don't have a problem saying a lot of things. That's the problem.
Zach had watched it. As a matter of fact, I watched it because you told me that you not only watched it, but you watched the whole docuseries twice.
Yeah, which I've watched it again since then.
Yeah, and so I thought, you know, on the working out in the morning that I would check it out. I thought it was very, very good. And so we were thinking about what to talk about this week, wanted to do something more lighthearted. And so our options were, do we want to talk about the impeachment or Don't Fuck with Cats?
Yeah.
And
we all know how I lean on that one.
About fucking with cats?
Yeah, don't fuck with cats.
Right.
No, I'm so over politics right now.
Yeah, I am too. It's too exhausting to even talk about right now. I don't even want to be on social media.
Yeah.
Because everybody on both sides is so fucking sure of themselves and is so
it's painful.
Adamant about how everybody else is wrong and stupid. And I can't even, there's nothing I'm going to say that's going to
No, it's absolutely painful matter. Right now.
Yeah. So don't fuck with cats. If you haven't seen it, this is a Netflix original, and it's three parts, right?
Yep, three 1 hour parts.
Yeah, it's a 3-part documentary. Really interesting. I'm really glad actually that Zach told me about it because I may have tuned out at the beginning because I was a little confused about what was happening.
Yeah.
Didn't seem like something I would have been interested in, but I knew where it was going from talking to you. So I went ahead and watched it, and it was amazing.
And it just keeps spiraling out of control. The whole story is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you haven't watched it, you know, we're going to spoil it.
Yes. You know, spoiler alert.
We're going to spoil this whole show, but go watch it. I mean, it's crazy how much it spirals out of control.
Yeah.
And if you don't know anything about the story, there was a video that showed up online that was a person placing two kittens in a vacuum seal bag. And suffocating them using a vacuum seal bag. Absolutely horrendous. They do not show in the documentary. So that just first and foremost, the documentary is really hard to handle at points, but there is no graphic material.
And on that note, I want to point out that what I really liked, I thought that the show was extremely well shot, like the cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, like what Zach's talking about, that video, they showed you the video parts of it,
yep,
but not the really graphic parts. And they would do things like they would frame the video like it was on a computer, just off screen where you could see kind of the bottom of the image, but not the bad stuff. And they did a lot of things with graphics where it was like, you know, when they were talking about somebody doing this online sleuthing, that there were, you know, you'd see a cursor moving around a computer screen. It wasn't always on people. I thought it was just really, really cleverly shot.
No, I thought it was too. So what happened is the video comes out, these people find the video, and as we all say, you see something online and you're like, this is fucked up, you know, we're going to report this person, and they realize they can't report this person. They don't know who this person is.
Right.
How are we going to report this person if we don't know who it is, where it is, anything about it? Which this is where it leads into what you do.
Right.
With the crowdsourced investigation is this a group of people sat down and pulled this video apart into pieces.
It was very Truth and Justice-esque.
Yeah.
Where they created a Facebook group to investigate this, just armchair sleuths like us.
Yeah. And so they downloaded the video and literally dropped it into stills. So thousands of stills, and they would go through every still trying to find pieces of evidence.
Right.
To just not only locate where the person was, but who it was.
Right. I think their first task was with that video was trying to figure out where this guy's at. I mean, it's on the internet, so it could be literally anywhere in the world. And they were looking at outlets.
Yep, outlets.
To see what, because different countries have different types of outlets. I think their big clue with that one was somebody noticed the pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, there was a pack of cigarettes. There was audio in the background. which they eventually found out was a video that was in Russian.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that kind of led them. They were trying to look there.
Right.
You know, there was a vacuum cleaner at one point that they had stumbled across this vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
Which was a big piece of evidence for them.
Yeah. I think the two big things were the cigarettes. They zoomed in and it had a Surgeon General's warning or something on there.
Yeah.
Or whatever was on the cigarettes indicated to them that they must be in North America.
Yeah.
So in the United States, Canada, or Mexico. And then that vacuum.
Yeah, they found a still shot of the vacuum and they actually went to a vacuum forum online.
Another online group.
And basically posted the photo and said, does anybody know what this vacuum is? And I don't think they thought that it was going to lead to much.
Right.
But someone, you know, said, yep, it's the whatever, I'm going to say Dyson. It's not probably not yeah. Dyson, but it's the whatever vacuum. And oh, by the way, that's only sold in North America.
Right.
So right there, they had already narrowed their search down to North America.
And at that point, they were pretty convinced that he was in Russia.
Yeah.
Because of that audio that was playing in the background.
And at one point, what she said, she looked at doorknobs from Lithuania for 16 hours or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what those people do. You know, a lot of your fans do that same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They break down these clues, you know, in the craziest way. You know, I think in season 6, the Melgar case,
mm-hmm.
when we were talking about the size of the TV.
Right.
And somebody had broke down the size of the TV in the picture based on the space of the screws in a shelf.
Right.
You know, who would know that?
Yeah. So there was a question about which TV was stolen and which mm-hmm. wasn't. And there was a crime scene photo of one of the bedrooms and there was a TV on a shelf. And we're like, was that the 21-inch TV or was that a different TV? And like these people got together, looked at the peg holes in the shelf and found like the manufacturers of that shelf and figured out what the standard spacing was between the holes and then used that to scale the TV to come up with the size and with the brand, eventually found the exact make and model of television. So we had the exact dimensions of it.
Yeah, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
All from that little minute thing.
And that's from what I do in Truth and Justice is the power of the crowdsourcing. I don't have time to do that. Yeah. I don't know if I would have the know-how to do that. But
I wouldn't even have thought to do that.
Yeah. You put 100,000 people on it, though. There's somebody in that group that's capable of doing – everybody brings a different skill set. And that's what we found here with the Don't Fuck with Cats documentary. Yeah. And by the way, the title, because I was like, what? This title makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
But it did – there was – when he did that, right in the opening minutes, kind of the main person driving the narrative, which was Body Movin. Yeah, Body Movin was her online screen name.
I think her name is Deanna Thompson.
Yeah, and she said that rule number one on the internet, or rule zero, don't fuck with cats.
I liked how they brought that in, because I didn't understand why it was called that either.
Yeah.
It seemed like a strange name for this documentary.
Mm-hmm. But it made sense once they explained that.
You know, that's one thing about this documentary, and we'll probably talk about it, but that I'm a little confused by, you know, they call it Don't Fuck with Cats. They put a huge emphasis on these cat videos. He made, I think, 3 cat videos once it was all said and done.
There was the one with the vacuum, the one where they drown them.
Yep, and then the one with the python.
Oh, I forgot about the python one because they just kind of touched on that.
So there's a second video where he drowned a cat. He taped it to a stick,
mm-hmm.
held it underwater.
Right.
And then the third video, he had a kitten playing on a bed and a python attack it. They put such huge emphasis on these 3 videos that I almost felt it like it overtook the fact that later on he killed a person.
Right.
I mean, obviously the story is about him killing this person,
mm-hmm.
but it was almost like the person was an afterthought to the whole documentary.
See, to me, it didn't feel that way. I felt like I looked at the 3 episodes as 3 acts.
Okay.
And it was like they were laying a foundation. We had to learn why this guy was on everyone's radar,
mm-hmm.
why this online group came to be and started tracking him. Then you move into the second act and you had to have them, you know, they're worried about him escalating and they're tracking him further. They finally tracked him all the way down to, was it Montreal?
Well, they tracked him to Toronto.
Oh, that's
first.
Right.
Yeah.
No, they track him down to Toronto and they actually think they figured out who the guy is.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the middle of the second act, the second episode, is when he does kill a human.
Yeah.
And then it shifts to the investigation into finding him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't mind the way it was laid out. There definitely wasn't a whole lot of emphasis put on him. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason that there was more put on the original cat video was to give us the motivation.
Yeah.
Explain the motivation for that group.
And how do you feel about – so at the beginning of this, to step back, you know, they had this person that they were tracking. And then when it burst open on social media, everybody and their brother came out with trying to find whoever this was. And they were mm-hmm. saying, oh, my buddy looks like this. Oh, so-and-so looks like this. And they were really putting heat everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It almost felt damning that they were putting this heat on people that maybe didn't deserve it.
Well, someone it ended up committing suicide.
Well, that's where I was going to go with that, is they did come to an individual that they thought was the person because of a Facebook post.
Mm-hmm.
And they come to find out that's not the person, and that person ended up committing suicide.
Right.
Now, we don't know that that's directly attached to him being blamed for it.
Right.
But it's hard to believe it isn't.
Well, I'm trying to remember what it was, because I know like our main characters, mm-hmm. Deanna, and there was a guy named John Green.
Yep.
They didn't think this was the guy, and they were like telling everybody, back off, that's not the guy, that's not the guy. And so,
but when you have 10,000 people pushing,
right? But wasn't the reason he was on it, didn't he like claim responsibility for it at some point?
So they found a Facebook page, and the profile picture appeared to look like the individual in the video.
Mm-hmm.
On the Facebook page, there was a different cat killing video. It wasn't any of the videos that had been posted. It was a different video of somebody killing a cat.
Right.
Which they don't think now that individual had anything to do with.
Right.
And someone just flat out asked him if he was the kitten killer, and he said, yep.
And then everybody's trying to track down who he was and where he was located and all that.
Yeah, and they tracked him to some small town, Windhoek, mm-hmm. in South Africa, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, and something that didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he ended up, he did end up committing suicide. I don't know if, like you said, if it had anything to do with that, but it certainly couldn't have helped.
Yeah.
The guy obviously had some mental health issues to begin with.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was really, really interesting for me watching how the group crowdsourcing literally tracked this guy down. So in the subsequent videos, they pulled more clues.
Yeah.
The vacuum and music playing and stuff. And then.
But see, at some point they got a tip, which was what really led them in the direction
of Luca.
Of Luca. Somebody sent them a tip saying, hey, there's this Luca Magnata guy. I think this is who it is.
Right.
But you don't know where that tip came from. You still don't know where this tip comes from.
Right.
Was it Luca himself?
Well, we did find out that he actually infiltrated their group.
Yeah. And was a couple posting times. Things.
Yeah. And was posting things in their group and knew what they were looking for.
Yeah.
And he was like planting some Easter eggs on purpose to misdirect them.
The one thing I'll say about this guy is obviously he's a psychopath, but the guy was an absolute genius.
Yeah.
The things he was doing, and like you said, the Easter eggs he was planting in the thought that he went through ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it was absolutely genius. It's crazy to me how scary genius it is.
Yeah. It's so they caught him just by sheer determination and attention to detail. So like when they found him in, I don't remember if it was when they found him in Toronto, I think. There was two different things they pulled from videos that he had posted. Once they figured that Luca was the guy.
They pulled down every photo they could find from him
mm-hmm.
and went through, and there is coding in the photos.
Uh-huh.
And all the coding had been stripped, and they figured that he had messed up somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And they were able to find the coding that actually has...
It's called the ethics data.
Okay. That has the GPS coordinates of where that photo was taken.
Right.
And they found it in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found a photo of him saying he was outside his apartment.
Right.
In Etobicoke, if that sounds right, something like this, Toronto, so the suburb of Toronto. And in the photo, you could see a gas station.
Right.
So
Or he was on the balcony of his apartment.
He was in the balcony of his apartment. In the photo, in the background, you could see a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the individuals, I think John Green is the one that sat and looked at all the gas stations.
Did Google Street Views.
Yep. To find that particular unit.
And then use the trajectory to trace back to the actual apartment number.
Yep.
Where he was.
And was able to figure out exactly what apartment was.
Yep.
And then the second time was another photo when they tracked him to Montreal. And it was based off a street light.
That was the one I was thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, there was a street light in the background, a pedestrian light in the background.
Yeah.
That was strange, you know, in the United States.
The staircase behind him and everything.
You know, in the United States, there is... You know, our pedestrian lights, and I believe the same way in Toronto, is they're square, they're yellow. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, they're painted a certain way. And these were square and black and just a different shape. So they literally Googled street lights or pedestrian lights and found an article about Montreal.
Right.
And it had a picture of these lights. And they're like, oh, that he must be in Montreal.
Well, and so to back up a little bit, by this point, they had figured out, they were fairly confident that Luca Magnata. was the person posting these videos, but he kept disappearing. He was like a model and wannabe actor and stuff, and and he had the videos would come up and then he would disappear and nobody knew where he was at. And he was very careful in all of his social media not to let people know exactly where he was.
Yeah, and Luca Magnotta was not even his name.
Oh, really?
His name was Eric Clinton Kirk Newman.
Did that come out in the documentary or did you look that up?
I had to look that up. That was never put forth in the documentary. That wasn't even his name. That was just his persona he took on.
Right.
And he did, I think he did legally change his name at one point, but that wasn't even like, that was not his birth name. He was trying to become this famous model.
Right.
You know, they questioned him having plastic surgery, which if you look, I mean, he's some of his, the angles of his face, I mean, it appears he's had plastic surgery.
Something. And, but that's why they were trying to figure out his location. Was because he had left Toronto and they couldn't figure it out. So once they figured out it was Montreal, then they went through Google Street View, every single street in Montreal.
And literally just walked up and down every single street.
Until it was that John Green again that found, there it is. There's the light, there's the staircase, there's the tree in the background. And they found right where he was at. So they knew about the area that he was in at that point. I think we're kind of jumping ahead a little bit. We brushed on it. But so by at this point, over the course of how long was it? Was it a couple of years?
So from the cat video to the person video was 2 years, I believe.
Okay. So during that time, he did the cat where he starts off like on a bed, like petting these two kittens. And like it was like a cute little kitten video. And then he puts them into this plastic bag and vacuum seals them. And then he did the one where he took a broom handle and taped one up to the broom handle and held it underwater and drowned it. And then he did the one where he took a cat and then took a huge python and released it to kill the cat.
And at that point, that's when they saw that he had definitely infiltrated and knew everything that they were doing. Because the original person they went after in South Africa, the profile photo, the person had a Santa Claus hat on.
Right.
Like a red Santa hat. And in the final video, the final cat video, he was wearing a red Santa hat.
Right.
You know, he was toying with them. You know, they would play movies in the background. He would do a lot of weird things to kind of.
Yeah. Well, and then we find out it's in the middle of episode two, I think, when we get introduced to Luca's mother. When they're looking for him. And then what do you think about mom?
Ooh, she was a special case. And there is some things that I found out about her afterwards, you know, that's not in the documentary, but she's a special case. I mean, she really is.
Definitely. I mean, I get supporting your kid, but definitely in denial.
Yeah.
And just, I mean, she's like, no, he didn't do this. Someone else made him do it. And you're looking for the wrong guy. It's like, he's on tape killing kittens and then killing a human being on video.
Yeah.
And she's very much, what did you find out afterwards about her?
They said that she was, you know, looking back at his childhood, that she was absolutely obsessed with cleanliness. Like she was a germaphobe. I mean, like to the point that she would lock them out of the house. She locked their pets out of the house in the winter and the pets died. I mean, she was just very, she was a germaphobe and just crazy about it. And the other thing you find out that's not in the documentary at all is his father was a schizophrenic.
Okay.
He was an alcoholic schizophrenic that basically took off. Luca ended up living with his grandmother. I mean, there's a lot of childhood things that weren't brought up in this documentary.
Right.
That definitely affected him down the road, I think.
Well, and that makes sense. You know, I work a lot with FBI profiler Jim Clemente, and he always talks about, you know, there's a lot of people that are sociopaths. Like, it's just genetically in their brain, they're sociopaths that may never be violent or hurt other people. And it's like that's a genetic predisposition. I'm trying to remember how it's something along the lines of a genetic predisposition loads the gun. And then your upbringing, a bad upbringing will cock the hammer, and then a traumatic event will pull the trigger.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. But a big one we see in the study of serial killers, psychopaths, so many times it comes back to their parents and specifically their mothers. It happens tons and tons of serial killers that the FBI has studied. We find that they're killing all these women and they're like surrogates for their mom. So that it doesn't surprise me that he had all these issues growing up.
Yeah. And his parents were very young. They were 16 and 17 when they had him, which is pretty young for parents.
Right.
They also talked about that he was homeschooled, which wasn't in the documentary at all, which sheltered him even more from the outside world.
Right.
You know, and he had this very like this film fantasy. You know, everything he did in his life was based off of movies.
Right.
And they do allude to that in the documentary.
Well, they get that is one of the things, and this big spoiler, if you haven't seen it yet. But one of the things that I thought was really, gosh, I don't want to say cool. I mean, he killed a man. This is not cool. But what was very intriguing and interesting to me was, for starters, just the fact that he was a film buff. He was he was obsessed with movies. One of the movies he was very obsessed with was Basic Instinct. Mm-hmm. He had like a keychain that he gave to his mom with the Basic Instinct on it. And he was, in a lot of ways, kind of, it almost, you ever see Usual Suspects? Yeah, like Kaiser Soze, how he pieced together this whole thing to fit the board behind him.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that in there where he was like kind of recreating the movie. And I don't know that it was really so much recreating the fantasy. As a matter of fact, in a minute I'll explain why I don't think that's what he was doing. But I think he just thought it was a game to put these little Easter eggs and clues in that were just imitations of that movie. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, he very carefully crafted the scene, so to speak, for, you know, like for the murder. So ultimately what ends up happening is he makes a fourth video, but this time the video starts and it's a guy tied up to a bed. And then he ends up straddling the guy and then stabbing him multiple times with what looks like an ice pick.
Yeah.
And this video goes out, and now two things are happening. You have the online group that's freaking out. But they have narrowed down who they know it's Luca Magnotta, and they know he's in Montreal. Well, then the police, I'll let you explain this, but I didn't realize there was a time gap here. But the police find this body, so they're trying to figure out who killed this guy. And in the meantime, this online group knows who killed them, and they're trying to get through to the police, and no one's listening.
So The time gap that Bob's talking about, and I've seen a few different ones. The one that I'm going to rely on is the found most accurate, is the video was posted the day after the murder. Mm-hmm. They figured out he was missing about the 24th, 25th.
Okay.
The video was posted on the 25th.
Okay.
So they knew him, you know, the cat group got the video right away.
Right.
They knew he did this. Nothing was found for days. Mm-hmm. You know, the documentary kind of skips over that and seems like it was very...
I thought it happened like the next day.
Yeah, it wasn't. So they found out that the packages that he had taken to the post office sat there for over 48 hours before they were distributed.
Okay.
Because it was a weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And the packages didn't go out till Monday. So those packages sat there with body parts in them. They said the same thing with the luggage. The luggage sat there for over 3 days at the curb with the torso in it. Before somebody noticed that.
Oh, so I thought you had said earlier it was like 2 months.
So that's one of the things I read was that, but I found a better timeline through the whole thing.
Okay.
So it said it sat there on the curb for 3 days before anybody even saw realized that there was maggots coming out of this, which means that trash had been sitting there the whole time too,
right,
with body parts, which is why he got away, because there is this time gap.
Right.
That he did this, put it out there and left.
Yeah. So what he had done was he killed the guy. And then literally chopped the guy up into pieces. Mm,
dismembered him.
And put his torso in a suitcase and put it out by a dumpster.
Yeah.
And then somebody noticed there was like blood and maggots coming out of the dumpster, opened it up, and there's a part of a body in there.
Yeah.
And then other body parts he sent in the mail to several people.
He actually sent 6 packages, which they did not talk about.
Uh-huh.
They found 2 packages. They sent 6. The others were intercepted. And apparently they all had notes in them that they have never disclosed what the notes say because they're worried about copycats.
Do we know who he sent them to?
So one was sent to the, we'll say, I guess I don't know how the Canadian government is set up, but basically the Canadian left and he sent one package to the Canadian right.
Okay. That's right. That's right.
You know, so it wasn't like necessarily a political attack. It was a political attack, but it was on both parties.
Right. Each had a body. And then there was 4 others that got intercepted.
They were sent to different universities, and they were sent that got intercepted because they had found these other packages by that point.
Right.
And they supposedly have notes and have never released the notes because they were worried about copycats.
Right. But one thing that I thought they did really well with the film is, so first we see the video. Now, again, they don't show the graphic part of the video. You get kind of a blurred view of what's happening. But they show you that there's like, he had a Casablanca poster on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a dog in the video, a black and white puppy that he had killed. And they talk about some of these details. Well, then they cut to the Montreal police crime scene photos of where they found the torso, and they start going through trash bags. And the police, what they find to be completely irrelevant, but they open up a trash bag, and there's a crumbled up Casablanca poster, and there's a dead dog, black and white dog, and another post in another bag.
Yeah, and I caught it right away, the shirt.
Yeah, and the yellow shirt.
The yellow shirt, which in the video he's wearing. Which right. In the previous surveillance video, June Lin, his victim, is wearing.
Right.
I mean, I caught it right away. It was crazy to me.
Well, I did too, and that's what I liked about how they did it, because I love when you feel like you're figuring something out before the police. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was just brilliant filmmaking, because they laid that groundwork. They let you see the yellow shirt. They let you see the Casablanca poster. They let you see or hear about the fact there's this little black and white dog. Mm-hmm. And then they show the police, who were not any insult to the police, but they were clueless because they hadn't seen the video.
Yeah.
And they're finding all the, and I don't think they collected them as evidence.
Well, and there's such a disconnect, because the cat group believed it was Luca.
Right.
From the beginning, they thought the perpetrator was Luca,
right.
Which it turns out it was, but mm-hmm. the perpetrator was Luca. And in the police, because there was such a disconnect, they found Luca's ID and assumed it was the victim.
Thought he was the, because there was no head.
Yeah, because there was
or
no head.
Arms.
So they assumed that was the victim.
Mm-hmm.
So they started off completely on the wrong trail.
Right. And they went back to his apartment
mm-hmm.
and found it empty. Did they find anything in there?
They said there was a can of lemon juice on the table, and it was
smelled like bleach.
It smelled like bleach, but because they didn't have a warrant. They didn't. It was basically a wellness check, and no one was there. They couldn't do anything else.
Right.
Which is afterwards, once they did get a warrant, they went in and did luminol, mm-hmm. and there was blood everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And so they, so you're seeing at this point, the online sleuths are frustrated.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to get a hold of somebody in the Montreal police to tell them, hey, this was Luca Magnotta. We know who did this. And at some point, somebody did get the video link to the female that I don't remember her name, the lead investigator.
Yeah. Claudia.
She had a really cool accent.
Yeah. Well, she's whatever. Yeah. Quebec.
Over yeah. there. So, it was, yeah, French-speaking part of Quebec, and she was speaking English, but her accent was just intriguing to me. I don't know why.
All right.
Sounds it's just good. The way she pronounced Magnotta.
Magnotta.
Yeah.
I can't say it the way she said it.
Magnetta. Magnetti or something like that she was saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, so somehow she watches the video, and then we get to see her have this revelation where she's like, and I'm looking, and when I'm looking at the video, is all of a sudden I'm remembering being at the crime scene. I'm like, there's the yellow shirt, the dog, the Casablanca poster, like all this. And they had, they didn't collect it as evidence because it didn't seem like it was related.
Yeah.
And somewhere in there they had pulled surveillance footage, and you see Luca and June Lin. Go into the apartment complex, and like you said, June is wearing this yellow shirt,
mm-hmm. very distinct yellow shirt.
Yeah, and then shortly after that, you see Luca walk out
in
wearing that yellow shirt.
Yeah,
and he goes to get supplies, trash bags and stuff to go mm-hmm. cut up the body. And you see him like he's just such a narcissist. He just killed someone.
Yeah, he literally walks out. When he comes back in, he stops and he looks in the mirror and checks his hair. You know what I mean.
There's no regard for human life. Like there was no conscience there.
None whatsoever.
Yeah, and then they have more surveillance video of the in the basement in the trash room, and watch Luca make multiple trips down there and put little packages in their body parts.
Yep.
Which a lot of them were never recovered. Did they ever recover the head?
They did recover the head in a park, like a couple days later,
really?
Which again wasn't in the film. I saw the name of the park. I didn't write it down, but yeah, it was recovered in a park about 2 days later.
Just sitting out?
Just laying there. It was just another tip that someone had called in, like, you know, which would freak you out, right? If you were just walking through the park and you're like, I think that's a head.
Right. Yeah.
You almost wouldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, is that a Halloween toy?
Right.
Like, what is that?
Never think it was a real head.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the police figure out that it's Luca. And mm-hmm. then we kind of lose the online group after that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they come in, they commentate and talk a little bit, but then there was a legit police investigation, which was interesting, is that at least in the film, the two never intersected.
Yeah. In the film, they never seemed to intersect. And from everything I could find, I couldn't find anything that intersected.
Right. Yeah. So it was like kind of the overwhelming. And again, the part I really liked about it was the power of a whole bunch of just ordinary people
mm-hmm.
putting their skill sets together to solve it. I mean, the police solved it when they had a body and a photo ID of the killer next to the body.
Yeah.
And they go to his apartment, and then, you know, and they watch the video and realize, oh, that, you know, the surveillance video, oh, the guy that's dumping the body parts, is the, that's his ID. This mm-hmm. is Luca, and they know who they're looking for. But a group of amateur sleuths on Facebook had already solved it way before that.
Yeah, and what we didn't talk about is the amateur sleuths even figured out how they met, you know, where he got the dog from.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, they figured out that they were going to look on Craigslist, mm-hmm. and they looked up for like a casual encounter hookup on Craigslist.
Well, it was more than they actually did like some forensic linguistics.
Yeah, they found out the way that he would write things and the way he would speak,
mm-hmm.
And they found an ad that laid out exactly the way he would do things. There was a certain double space with a comma that he would use. There was a lot of different
things.
And he would do things,
something like with a period, like after a sentence, he would do space, period, space, space.
Yeah, I think it was with a comma.
Or comma. Yeah, yeah. You're right. You're right. Yeah, yeah.
It was a double space and a comma. It was mm-hmm. it was a very strange.
Yeah.
And they literally found a Craigslist personal ad wanting a hookup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's how they figured out that they had met.
Yeah.
They found out he got the dog that way.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of things like that, that they were just ahead of the police.
Yeah. So, that I mean, that was kind of the... I was a little disappointed in the fact that I was waiting to find out that finally the police listened to them and yeah. they solved the crime, but that wasn't really what happened. It was like these online amateur sleuths solved the crime, and then 2 months later the police caught up to him.
Yeah,
and then they end up catching him because they just caught him on. By that point, they had put out all over the place like, this is the guy, pictures of him, this is him.
Yep, he was all over the place. He was. I think he was in Berlin, or maybe not Berlin.
He went to Paris at one point.
He was in Paris. And I mean, they were all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Makes you wonder where he got his money.
So he actually hooked up with a gentleman while he was in Europe through a gay hookup site mm-hmm. named Frank Rupert. They met online and they literally spent 4 or 5 days together.
Okay.
And they were together up until June 4th, which is when he was caught.
Right.
And the Frank Rupert. Had to go do some work, and Luca took a train into town to go to an internet cafe, which is where they ended up catching him. You know, he went to the internet cafe, and the guy sitting there, we had just watched the news,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, I think that's that guy that just came in.
Sitting back there at a computer.
Yeah. And he went back and pretended to clean up, mm-hmm. you know, so he could see what the guy was looking at. And Luca was literally looking at his own wanted poster on Interpol.
Really?
Yeah. That's how they caught him. That's how the guy put it together that's who it was he went back there, and Luca was literally sitting at the computer looking at his own Interpol wanted ad.
That's something.
Yeah.
That's something.
He got caught looking at himself.
Of course, what a way to go out for that guy. Of yeah. course. The narcissist that's mm-hmm. always doing it. But yeah, they showed the surveillance video on the film or in the show about, you know, the police came in full. Was he in Germany?
I think he was in yeah. Berlin.
They were like the German police came in. It was like a military style police, and they yeah. come in. They're not messing around. Like a battalion of soldiers come in and drag him out. And then we get, and we've been led to believe Luca had apparently started to lay groundwork for a defense like 2 years before this.
See, yes, I definitely wanted to get into this with you
uh-huh.
because I wanted to see what you thought about this.
I don't know.
Because as Bob was saying, he started this groundwork. You know, he said that he was an escort in Toronto
mm-hmm.
at one point, and he had a client that had become very possessive and would beat him. And there was a report that they took him to Miami and raped him and left him drugged on a beach. And there was a police report in Miami of him being found drugged on a beach. And, you know,
right.
this everything lined up. You know, he went to a lawyer 2 years ahead of time
mm-hmm.
and said that Manny Lopez is...
Is that so? That guy, that's okay. That makes more sense to me, because I was thinking that guy was a cop. He was a lawyer.
The
guy that looks just like Kirk Douglas.
Yes. And he came in and said that to him.
Uh huh.
Michael Douglas looked like Michael Douglas.
Oh, yeah, Douglas. Yeah. Michael
Douglas. And he told him all these incidences they had with Manny, this individual named Manny Lopez, and that Manny was controlling him and all this stuff. And he would literally sit and send this lawyer emails in the middle of the night telling him, Manny's outside right now threatening me.
Mm-hmm.
Just crazy, building this story.
Right. And to his mother, too, because his mother was always talked about, you need to find Manny. Manny's making him do all this.
Now, here's the one thing that is really, really intriguing to me, and I don't know what I believe or how to even understand this. At one point in the documentary, they're talking to his mom, and she firmly believes that Manny is the person in charge of all of this.
Right.
In the Python video, at the end of the video, there is another person there.
Right.
There's another hand.
Well, there was another thing that they showed they were trying to get you to catch that I caught was after the murder video, you watch him walk out holding the videotape in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, what year was this?
Yeah.
Like, when did video cameras have tapes in them?
Yeah.
Anymore.
So this was the murder. What was 2012? I think is when the murder happened.
Yeah. It just seems like
Yeah. Why would you have it seems like it would be digital.
Yeah.
Everything's been digital for a long time now.
Right. Real long time.
But that's what gets me is where was that really a person? Who is that? Where is that person?
Yeah. And they just kind of hinted at it, but they showed the picture of the video, like the screenshot. Mm-hmm.
And there's a third hand.
Yeah, you can see his two hands and then a third hand in there. But they didn't talk about it a whole lot. Yeah, they just kind of showed it. You know, so maybe there was this Manny. But ultimately, it was the police said there was never any evidence that any Manny actually existed. You know, that he was moving freely from country to country to country to country. How was and that's the part where I'm like, yeah, there's no freaking way this guy. He's got Manny controlling him. Is Manny following him from Montreal, Toronto to Montreal to Paris to Berlin, all over the world?
Mm-hmm.
Seems unlikely, but that extra set of hands was like, oh, maybe. But then we find the Basic Instinct references.
One of his personalities was Kurt Trammell.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the Facebook group decided to look up K. Trammell.
Yeah.
And the main character in Basic Instinct is Catherine Trammell.
Right.
Which is where they came up with the K. Trammell.
Mm-hmm.
And she, in the movie, had a possessive ex-boyfriend.
Named Manny.
Named Manny Vasquez.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, named Manny.
And then and so then you piece this whole thing together in this video. First of all, the lawyer, like we said, the lawyer that he was talking to about Manny is the guy that looks like Michael Douglas, who's in Basic Instinct, if you haven't seen it. He was the cop in Basic Instinct. And then the murder scene. So what he actually stabbed June to death with was a screwdriver, but he painted it to make it look like the ice pick from Basic Instinct.
Yep.
Tied the guy up in the same manner as the victim in Basic Instinct. One of the victims in Basic Instinct was tied up, straddled him, straddled the victim just like Sharon Stone did in Basic Instincts, and then he recreated even the Casablanca one of those poster was mimicking something from
the movie. There was a stained glass window, a yellow stained glass window above the bed.
Right,
and that's what I mean. It was mimicking that.
Yeah, and so he stuck that up there to make it. So then the whole Manny Vasquez and Manny Lopez and he's K. Trammell, and he literally recreated this whole scene. And then his defense was that this Manny made him do everything, that Manny's just off camera forcing him to make these videos and all that.
Yeah, and he said that Manny was outside sending him phone calls of what to do.
Right.
And that he in that video, you see him leave with what appears to be the tape.
Right. But it's real blurry.
It is real blurry.
Surveillance video. Yeah. But then part of the thing was, I think that's where his story fell apart because they were actually able to pull records like cell tower records.
Yeah, that he had nothing.
And there was no call logs that fit what he was describing.
Yeah, it's all mind-blowing to me. And the big thing I want to ask you before we wrap this up, and this is the part that I really don't know how I feel about, is this Facebook group, this group that ultimately found him and kind of chased him around. Is it the chicken and the egg, the chicken and the egg scenario? Like, what was the issue? What caused what? Did he post this video and these people found him and pushed him to go further? Or do you think he would have gone further on his own? That's a thing that I'm torn with. Do you think that these people, by doing this, gave him what he wanted and he wanted more of it?
In a way, I think yes, because only because of the way the psychopath and narcissist mind works. There's only, you have to look at behaviorally, why put a video out? You can kill cats all you want.
Yeah.
What's the point? The reason behind putting a video out, it's to get a reaction and to get attention. So he got that. And then he continued. He loved, he was eating up. He was in the groups, watching them all try to find him. And then, of course, he did it again and he escalated again. So I think he's a psychopath who probably would have to be honest with you, it may have been worse because with nobody tracking him down or finding him, he could have become a serial killer of humans instead of a serial killer of cats.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that he definitely was doing what he was doing because he loved it. He also, one of his favorite movies was Catch Me If You Can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he loved the chase. You know, he loved the fact where people were finding him and he was outsmarting him. But so I think there is a part of that where the online group doing that gave him the attention and probably encouraged him to go further with it. But at the same time, I don't blame any of those people because I don't know how to put it, but that was going to happen.
Yeah.
You put a horrible video like that out like that, the people, if it wasn't that group, it was going to be a different group. There's going to be people trying to find him.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't want to put blame on those people saying that they pushed him to do this, mm-hmm. but it is just an interesting thought of by them doing this, did it push him further?
Right. And it could, because, you know, the underlying behavior to me indicates that his whole intent and purpose was to get attention.
I mean, clearly that's what he wanted. Everything he did was to get attention. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he created, you know, thousands of users to comment on his own group.
Right.
To try to push him. You know, he created rumors saying he was dating Madonna.
Yeah.
They said he created a rumor saying he was dating another Canadian serial killer.
Right.
I can't remember her name off the top of my head.
Yeah, me either.
And it was essentially that he did all of it to try to push his own fame.
Yeah. That was his fame. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Interesting topic. Definitely recommend the series. If you haven't watched it, Don't Fuck With Cats on Netflix. And the ultimate end of the story was that he was convicted.
He was convicted. 25 years without parole.
Right. Which in the United States, that would have been a much harsher sentence, mm-hmm. I'm sure.
You know, and they did. The one thing that I thought was interesting, which makes sense, is when they did catch him, they flew him home on a private flight, which was a big, I mean, they basically had a military flight flying him home.
Yeah. It wasn't like a cushy private jet. It was a military flight.
But it made sense. I mean, at first I was kind of like, that seems weird. They spent, you know, I looked it up. They spent like $400,000 to fly him home.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you couldn't put him on a commercial plane.
Right.
You know, how are you going to get him home?
Yeah. And he would have got so much joy out of everyone recognizing him.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we are out of time for today. Thank you guys for tuning in. Not sure what we're going to talk about next week. So if you have an idea.
But we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. Whatever it is, we're going to talk about it.
Uh-huh.
If you have an idea, make sure you hit us up on social media at Bob Weave Pod, wherever you get your social media. And if you haven't left us a review on iTunes, please do that. And or on YouTube or do they leave reviews on YouTubes? On the YouTubes?
Comments.
I'm a boomer.
Comments. Give us a thumbs up, a comment.
Right. All right. That is all we have for you guys. Thank you again for listening. And I started to say earlier, I didn't finish it, but I want to throw a little shout out to my 14-year-old son, Quentin, who has taken over our video editing. So if you like the video editing done on this, it was done by a 14-year-old child in our sweatshop here at NBI Studios.
Boom.
Boom. All right. As always, Zach, thanks for being my friend.
Love you, buddy.
Love you too, man. Bob and Weave is an NBI Studios production, produced and edited by Mike Bussing, and music by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. The artwork and our logo was created by Zach, and the video editing was done by me. You can connect with us on all forms of social media at Bob Weave Pod. And if you'd rather watch than listen, check out the Bob and Weave Podcast on YouTube. If you have any questions or a guest request, you can email us at contact@BobWeavePod.com. If you like the show, please take a minute to go on iTunes and rate and review us. On behalf of myself and Zach, we love you guys. Thanks for listening.